overnight, a low around 10. Then for tomorrow, some light snow possible before noon, otherwise a cloudy day, a high near 20. Saturday night, another chance of light snow after midnight, a low of 10. And then for Sunday, we'll start the day with the possibility of yet some additional light snow before noon. Then expect gradually clearing skies, not much change in temperature, a high around 23. Right now, 24. I'm David Cole, WGDD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is coming up.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD on this snowy Friday morning. I'm Gregory Berg. I am happy to be with the conductor of the Carthage Choir, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli, who is also chair of the music department at Carthage and director of choral activities there, and the man who helped put together and lead the Carthage Choir through a thrilling tour of Europe during J-term. And with us also today, three members of the Carthage Choir, including the president, Chaz Young, class of 2018, so a senior who is actually a biology major. Also with us, Amanda Pettit, who is a junior music education major in the choral area, and Alex Heiding, also a junior who is a computer science major. And all three of these are members of the E-Board, so officers of the choir. So they had a big hand in making everything go as smoothly as it did. I should mention as well, in the interest of saving life and limb and keeping everybody safe for Sunday afternoon's homecoming concert, we're actually recording this in the safety of Carthage's Siebert Chapel on Thursday afternoon. So nobody had to venture out into the elements this morning to make this possible. So welcome, everybody, to the morning show. And Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli, let's get a little overview from you about this exciting tour. First of all, even though it's exciting, this is getting to be sort of old hat for you. You've taken groups all sorts of places all over the world many times over. Have you lost count of how many tours you've helped lead?
Maybe a little bit, but it never gets old, and it's always a new adventure. So it's wonderful to have the chance to do this over again. It's beautiful.
Explain how this, that is, tours of Europe figure in, for instance, kind of the regular schedule of the Carthage Choir, and maybe a word, too, about some of the other major ensembles here on campus and how often these kind of trips can take place.
As I understand it, the Carthage Choir went for the first time sometime in the 60s, I believe 66 or something, the first time. But it was not a regular event. The whole thing started in 1973, and since then, the choir has gone to Europe once every 3 years. If you do the math, exactly, from 73 to now, I believe is 16th trip that we did this year. And it's always due in January. That is the January term that we have at Carthage. So, and it always has been to Europe for some reason. I never ventured somewhere else.
Now, if I remember correctly, you actually posed a question to the members of the Carthage Choir. I don't remember when that was, if that was maybe even last year.
The last time.
Explain what the question you posed to them.
In terms of going somewhere else?
Right.
Yeah. Well, the idea was that, well, do we want to explore another place, maybe China or maybe some other place? But the option at the time was Spain, and Spain won by a large majority. So so that was the selection
okay.
That time.
So this particular tour, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion where you were going to be going.
Well, we had different options, but one of the things that actually helped was the fact that I have a lot of friends in the places that we visited, and one of the things that I wanted to be different this time around was to going on tour, but having people with whom you could share concerts, and because In other trips that we've done, for instance, when we went to Ireland back in 2012 or something, we sang in phenomenal cathedrals, amazing, but not a lot of people there in the audience. And we also sang in beautiful places this time around, but in virtually all of them, except the one in Budapest, the Basilica, that we had audience anyway because there was lots of tourists there. But we had a choir with whom we were sharing the concert, a local choir. And that made the event very different, much better. So that was very enjoyable this time.
Fantastic. So Chaz Young, as a senior, were you in the Carthage Choir as a freshman? So was this your second Carthage Choir European tour?
Yes, sir, it was. The first one was 3 years ago. We went to Spain. Wow. That was a very fun time.
So just say a word about how different it was to be on a second choir tour wearing the mantle of choir president, among other things, and also the fact that it was your second time around.
Well, the choir president when I was a freshman, her name was Lizzie. I definitely didn't give her enough credit for the stuff that she had to put in, as well as her e-board, because I know we had a couple of meetings outside of like the stuff that we would normally do. And it wasn't as much work as I was expecting, but it was still a decent amount. And it's difficult to wrangle an entire choir and get everyone's opinion for what to do for the day if it's up in the air. The experience I had freshman year is drastically different because I know what I'm doing this time around. It's like, you know, I'd never been out of the country before, so going to some completely different place was, I had no idea what was happening. I was lucky I had a bunch of people with me, and this time around I wasn't as scared, and I could make my own decisions instead of just latching onto a group and going with them.
So you were a grizzled veteran.
You could say that, yeah.
Amanda Pettit and Alex Heiding, both juniors. I know you would not have been on that Carthage Choir tour. Had you ever been on a tour or a trip of any kind out of the country, Amanda?
Besides with Carthage Choir, we just went to other places in the U.S. So we did a Midwest tour, and then we did a tour to Washington, D.C., and around that area as well. But other than that, I hadn't really been outside of the country, let alone to another continent. So I was very nervous coming into it, you know, from everything from the plane ride to just being so far away from home and for such a long period of time. Also, it was a really long tour. I was really nervous about it. I knew everything was going to be okay. But, you know, it was a lot of excitement coming up to it. And definitely all my expectations were far beyond met.
Mm-hmm. Glad to hear it. Alex, was this the first time you've been out of the country?
This was not. I was actually out of the country last year with the Carthage Wind Orchestra when we went to Japan. And that's kind of a tradition now with the wind orchestras to go to Japan every 3 years. So it falls such that you go to Japan with the wind orchestra, and if you're also in the choir, you go with the choir to Europe the following year. So that's what happened with me. And looking back, you could say for the people that For Amanda, who'd never been out of the country before, that's how I felt last year. It was very, like, I don't know what to expect. But just like Chaz, I had been out of the country before this trip, and I was like, all right, I'm super relaxed, I'm super chill. Let's just go ahead and do this and have a lot of fun.
Mm. It sounds like everybody did. We're talking today on the morning show with three members of the Carthage Choir, Chaz Young, Amanda Pettit, Alex Heiding, and with their director, their conductor, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli. They are back from a tour of Europe that took them to Hungary and Slovenia and Italy, and it was a long trip. I mean, I was surprised at how long you were gone. I don't remember exactly how many days are we talking about and how many concerts.
It was actually 17 days, and we sang quite a bit. We sang 10 concerts and 2 masses, right? I think so, 10 real concerts and 2, we sang for 2 masses and 2 incredible places. If you want, we can touch on that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, we sang in San Marco Basilica, or Basilica of St. Mark's, in Venice, which is a very historical place for those of us musicians. I think it's very significant. That's a place that, for instance, where Monteverdi worked as a maestro di cappella, or a kapellmeister, if you want to use different terms. And then also Giovanni Gabrielli and Andrea Gabrielli, their nephew and uncle, different times, of course. And The architecture of the place is so special that having so many balconies, it's one of the reasons that we studied a piece called Plaudite that is written for three different choirs that sort of talk to each other. So that's one of the reasons why we learned and studied that piece. Then also we learned a piece by Monteverdi and we performed in that place. The mass was done not in the main altar because it was a weekday and it was a little bit on the side. So even though we couldn't use the balconies, still the place was wonderful enough and the acoustics were amazing. And the second big event was to sing for the Vatican. We sang for St. Peter's Basilica for a mass. Once again, it was a weekday and not in the center altar that is only reserved for the Pope. It was in the back altar, but still was incredible. And I'm sure they have their say about what they felt about it.
I still remember the day when you announced to the choir that that was going to be happening. There are announcements that can be much more exciting than that. Just ahead of that, say a word about all the hard work that went on before you departed for Europe. When did the members of the Carthage Choir arrive, and what sort of gauntlet did you put them through?
Good. Well, we, of course, worked during the semester, right? Last semester, learning repertoire and so on for the regular concerts and situations that we have, Christmas festival. But then we came back on, I think it was January 7th, right?
Yep.
Wasn't it? That we had, well, 2 hours of rehearsal that night. But then, starting on Monday, we had 6 hours of rehearsals, with some breaks, of course, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, right? And then we rehearsed 5 hours on that Sunday, the day before we left. And on top of that, there was a class, because this was not only a performance tour, it's a study tour, we call it. There was a class with a professor from the classics department, Dr. Ben DeSmit, who taught 2 hours every day of the week. So it was very intense. Let me tell you that the credits, the 4 credits that they received for this class and this study tour, well deserved.
Well earned.
Yeah.
Talk for a moment about the repertoire that you chose. You've already spoken about a couple of pieces that you chose very specifically because of the fact that they emanated out of Venice and specifically San Marco, but otherwise, just in general, how did you put this repertoire together?
A couple of ideas. Every time that we go to Europe, audiences in Europe want to hear American music. So that's something that you need to have some repertoire representing our nation. Now, one of the concerts, particularly the director from that choir, we're talking about the Liszt Academy in Budapest. We're talking about a very important institution of higher learning of music in Hungary, probably the most prominent one. And we shared a concert with them with their choir. Initially, they were going to do a repertoire all of Hungarian music, and then he asked me to do only American music. So then we had that specific request. But also, apart from San Marco, because the class involved Dr. DeSmit and the idea of the classics and that area of the world, those three nations, I had the idea of commissioning a piece from a recent grad. His name is Carl Steffens. He graduated last May, and I commissioned him to write something for the choir. And I gave him the choice to find a text that was relevant and interesting for him, that related to the classics. So he chose a text from the Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri, closely related to the topic that Dr. DeSmit was going to be teaching and so on. So that was a way to sort of put things together, the music and the class. And the piece was premiered and sung in all over those three countries and was very well received. People had a lot of wonderful things to say. And then, so American music, the pieces for San Marco, the piece by Carl, and then some other pieces that were generic, including also a few pieces in Italian that we had to learn on the spot there, and a couple of pieces in Slovenian that we shared a concert with choirs there.
Wow, so quite a wonderful mix. Maybe Chaz, the choir president, and your two officers as well, can say a word about the kind of things that needed to happen in terms of the choir members being ready for this trip, aside from learning all the music. What sorts of logistical matters need to be taken care of? What are especially important things for choir members not to forget and to sort of get ready? What are the kinds of things that you sort of talked about and made sure happened so you could all safely and efficiently leave on this trip and be ready for it?
Yeah, in the past, luckily on tours in America, we've had people forget bow ties, people forget shoes. Somebody forgot their jacket one year. So we had a long talk about remembering everything you'd possibly need to perform, everything that's part of your uniform, as well as the music, because some of it was memorized, but some of it we never wound up getting memorized because it was very difficult music that we did, especially the piece that we had composed for us. And just remembering that we were going to be gone for 17 days and packing accordingly and not forgetting anything when you go to the hotels. And it's people were very, very good this year about remembering everything. If something was forgotten, it was just for that concert. They wound up bringing it with them to the tour. It was just back in the hotel room to something that would slip their mind. So we had a good choir this year for remembering things and performing well.
How about having passports? Was there a deadline for everybody to have their passport in hand and in order?
There was, yeah. Before we left, Dr. Garcia Novelli had us photocopy our passports so he would have a portfolio of them to take with us in case something would happen to our passport. And when we were on the bus going to the airport, he didn't let the bus leave unless everyone showed him their passports and had them together. And some of the stops after we'd go, he'd be like, you know where your passport is, show it to me. So it was very, you need to have your passport, otherwise we don't leave.
Right. That is one of the more important things to have set. Good idea.
Another thing in terms of preparedness was, you know, this tour is pretty long. It was 17 days. And we had to pack enough clothes because we didn't actually get an opportunity to do our laundry. So, you know, having enough clothes throughout that tour was, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it, to be honest. And I'm pretty sure I wasn't the only one. But I just made it by with, like, enough socks and everything that I needed packed into the suitcase. So, and another thing that I didn't even realize I was going to need was an electrical plug specifically for European electrical outlets.
Yep.
I actually ended up blowing out my hairdryer, so that kind of stinks. I had to get a new one, but it's okay. And so, just things you don't even realize you're going to need when you're traveling to a different country. And then everyone's like, oh, yeah, this is, obviously, don't you know this? And I was like, oh, no, I didn't know that, actually.
How about you, Alex? Anything to add on pre-trip prep?
I think for this one, kind of going back to Amanda, it was just kind of preparing for how long it was. Because this was a longer trip than I think most of us had ever been on. Even including, like, a summer vacation with their family or something. I don't think anyone has really gone for 19 days, including travel days, to a location. It's like, I think people did have to look at this in a different way to kind of formulate the different things that they go, oh, well, I'll just take this for granted because I'm going to be home in, like, 4 or 5 days, or I'm going to be home in 10 days. Well, you're not going to be home for essentially 19 days, so make sure you have everything. Kind of like pack everything except the kitchen sink. That's kind of how it kind of went for most people. And I don't think it was too much of an issue once people understood that. I didn't hear too many issues of, oh, I forgot this at home. I need this now. Luckily, the European culture is very similar to American culture in the sense of if we forgot something here, they generally had something very similar or the same thing over there. So it was like, all right, if you forgot something, you could generally replace it over in Europe.
If need be, right. And I guess mentally and emotionally, you have to prepare yourself for the fact that you're going to be on the road for such a long period of time. But how exciting. Is this longer than normal for a choir tour to Europe?
I think this is the longest we've done, at least since I came. And also the thing that was very different is that at least the one in 2015 was Spain. So there's only one country, one language. Mm. When we went to 3 years before, it was Ireland and Scotland and Northern Ireland. Still kind of the same thing, two countries, technically speaking, but same language, whatever. This was three very different nations and three different languages. See that Hungarian has nothing to do with the other two languages. Slovenian, separate, very different. And, of course, Italian. So very, very different cultures, languages, and everything. So,
right. I remember that from 2000, where we started in the Czech Republic and ended up in Austria, Germany, and ended in France. And that, in a sense, made it even more mentally exhausting to have that gauntlet, but a wonderful kind of exhaustion for sure. Say a quick word about your connections to Budapest, Hungary, which made that a logical place to begin this wonderful tour.
I was lucky to take a couple of trips over the last 3, 4, 5 years with students from Carthage, actually. We went to the Kodály Institute of Music, both in 2014 and 2017. So I made some connections as we were there, made some friends, and for instance, with the director of the Institute, of the Kodály Institute, a very prominent scholar and conductor, who happens to be the conductor of the Liszt Academy Choir, so in Budapest. So it was last year at this time, last year when I say, hey, I'm going to be, next year, would you like to share a concert? So I say this with a lot of profound love and respect for all of the singers. I don't think they know how much time it goes into preparation of this. Like, for instance, what I'm saying, a year ago, already planning where the concert was going to be, what date, and, you know, lots of things.
Right. So. Oh, it's an immense amount of work. So let's turn to our students and hear what your primary recollections are and reminiscences of Budapest, Hungary, where this tour began. From the pictures, it looks like a gorgeous city. I've never seen it for myself.
Budapest kind of just felt like a normal big city. It had the European flair and a bunch of the old architecture that a lot of big European cities have, but it was kind of like a Chicago, to be honest. It was cheaper than Chicago, if I'm being perfectly honest. Our hotel was an excellent spot in Budapest. It was almost in the middle of the city. We could walk a lot of different places, and it was fairly easy to walk. It was a nice place, and what surprised me a lot was that a lot of people in Hungary spoke English. And if you would go to different places, primarily in the city center around our hotel, they had no problem understanding us, and their English was better than some of the people that went on the trip, to be honest.
That's not a shock.
For me, my favorite part about Budapest was by far our first concert at St. Stephen's Basilica. You know, that was one of the, I think maybe the one concert that we didn't do with another choir. So, you know, as Dr. Gian said, it's really hard to tell who's going to be there. How many people are going to be at this concert? And, you know, during rehearsal, the first thing I realized was this is a freezing cold church. It was absolutely freezing. They did not have any heat in there. But besides that, and, you know, once we actually started performing and the concert started, completely forgot about the cold weather because the whole entire church was filled. And as the concert went on, more and more people just kind of filtered in and stayed. And, you know, by the end of it, people were in tears. And, you know, from having no expectations as to how many people were going to come to having an audience filling this basilica who genuinely were enjoying our music. I mean, I don't think there's a more fulfilling feeling in the world. I mean, I just could not stop smiling afterwards, and it was the perfect way to start off the tour.
Oh, wonderful. Alex, your thoughts on Budapest, Hungary?
Well, it's nothing going to be like Amanda's answer, but the one thing that really stuck out to me was, and as odd as it might sound, it was the Parliament building in Hungary, in Budapest. It was something. It was a really, really large building, but it was done in an architectural style that you do not see here in America. It's also not overly common in Europe anymore, even with the buildings, like the older buildings that are still around. So because of it, it's a very unique building, even though it's that architecture is still kind of popular over there. Just the scale of the building is impressive beyond words. And coming from Wisconsin, which is where I was born and raised, I was never born in a big city or never really been around big cities, big buildings or anything, to see that massive of a building up close in person, and not in terms of height, but in terms of just how big, how wide, how long it was, that was something else. Like, you know, you're in Europe when I saw that. I was like, I know I'm in Europe because I would never see this in America or at least anywhere near me. Wow. So that, to me, I think was the one thing that really stuck out to me.
Interesting. Dr. Cassio Novelli, say a word about this Liszt Academy Choir that you and the Carthage Choir shared a concert on. What is that group like, and what did it feel like to sort of put your group, in a sense, head-to-head with that kind of ensemble?
Well, it's a smaller ensemble. It's only like 26, 28 members. And I was surprised like 2 weeks before the trip or three when I saw the program where they sent me the program and they actually were not going to do Hungarian music. And that was the original plan. And when I asked the director what's going on, what happened, they changed. Well, so like I realized I didn't have enough rehearsal time. And we're going to do a program that we did at the beginning of the fall that we had. So we're recouping that and putting it together. Well, they sang a very famous piece in the repertoire that is the Mass in G minor by Vaughan Williams. Ooh. That is a cappella. And it's for double choir. For double choir. Yeah. Completely a cappella and double choir. It's like, I don't know, a 25-minute piece or something. So they did beautifully well and very well done. But they sang first, and then we came, and I must say that we had, you know, we stood up for ourselves, and we did our own. We did really well, standing next head-to-head with the Liszt Academy Choir. There was nothing that we had to be ashamed of for any reason. And it was so neat, let me tell you, that in the audience there were a couple of professors from the Kodai Institute that we had had last year when we attended, and they were there in the audience. I had no idea they were coming, and it was great that they could see us perform at that level.
Cool. So. Was that a fun concert for you guys too? And do you agree with your conductor that you were head to head on essentially the same level as this wonderful group from the Liszt Academy?
You see, when you're actually in the choir and you don't get to sit back and hear the choir, it's really hard to, I think, judge how we sounded, you know, at the concert. Normally, it's more of a self-assessment. How did I do? Mm. Because a lot of times I'm focusing more on just singing instead of, oh, what does the whole entire choir sound like? Obviously, I'm trying to blend and everything.
Sure,
but
and you're not in a position to really hear the totality. And,
yeah, so there are some concerts definitely during the tour that I left and I was like, ooh, I don't know how that was. And then a parent or someone in the audience had recorded it and I got to listen to it. And I, as well as I'm sure plenty of others in the choir, were like, we sounded like that? Are you serious? So, you know, I'm sure Dr. Jan is actually telling the truth, even though it's hard for me to be able to tell from just singing in the choir.
As someone who has listened to the choir due to sickness in the past. I do understand where the choir sits at a professional level in terms of how we sound and the musicality we bring to the choral music. And listening to the different, not just the Liszt Academy of Choir, but also the other choirs that we performed with in Europe, I was able to say, yeah, we were just as good as all the European choirs. Like, easily, and yes, maybe I'm a little biased, I am a member, but being able to listen to what we actually sound like from my own ears and not through a recording does bring a different appreciation for how it actually sounds. So even though that choir, not people have changed since I've listened to them, but I still strongly believe what I believe in stating that we were just as good as those European choirs.
Yeah, it's a great
honor.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with three members of the Carthage Choir, just back from their extensive tour of Europe to Hungary, Slovenia, and Italy. Chaz Young, Amanda Pettit, Alex Heiding, and also here, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli, their conductor, the chair of the Department here at Carthage. We're talking today in anticipation of the choir's homecoming concert, which is this Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock at Siebert Chapel. Maestro, you should say a word now about why the choir next went to Slovenia and the connection that you and the choir have with Slovenia.
Sure. Well, for different reasons, I started a relationship with different conductors in Slovenia in the past. You know, it goes a few years back, but it includes me actually visiting Slovenia, Ljubljana in particular, and I was a guest at the Academy of Music of Ljubljana. I did a couple of rehearsals and conducted two concerts with the Ave Chamber Choir. That happened 2 years ago. Then as a result of that sort of exchange, we had a conductor from Slovenia last year here at Carthage, and we shared a concert of Slovenian music with the Master Singers of Milwaukee that I'm the conductor of, and that was last year. So not only I knew Ave Chamber Choir and Alenka, that now became the conductor at the time, was a member, but also I made friends with other conductors, including, it was a coincidence, including a citizen of Argentina. As you know, Greg, I was born and lived most of my life at the beginning in Argentina. And then some other conductors. So we had four concerts, actually, in Slovenia. One in the city of Kranj, one in Koper, where the university choir, one in Postojna, where there are beautiful caves, and then in Ljubljana proper, the capital, where we sang at the professional hall. It was the Philharmonic Hall of the country, really. Mm. So that was an amazing professional feeling.
Fantastic. So, your memories of Slovenia?
Slovenia was kind of surprising because I think none of us really went in knowing what Slovenia was. I mean, the class watched a movie. I wasn't a part of the class myself, but they watched a movie that kind of gave them a different preconceived notion of Slovenia than what we saw. If I were to put it into perspective, I grew up in a small town my entire life, like 6,500 people. And I would say Slovenia is the country version of a quaint small town. Oh. I think everyone has good intentions, whether or not, you know, it's a different culture. And so sometimes people say things and it's interpreted differently by us than it would be there. But I think everyone there has the best intentions, and it was some of the best hospitality that we received on the entire trip.
Wow.
It's a wonderful place.
Other thoughts about Slovenia?
For me, the most memorable things about Slovenia were definitely the choir conductor that Dr. Jam was talking about, Alenka. I, especially as a music education major and a future choir conductor, look up to her a lot. You know, she's in her 20s, and she's conducting two adult, extremely good choirs. And, you know, as a woman, and everyone takes her very seriously, and she's very knowledgeable and very professional. In everything she does, she's amazing. So just being able to see her again, because we went on tour with her last year and we met her then, just being able to see her again was so great. And also the Postojna caves in Slovenia were such an experience. I mean, I was trying to get pictures, but no pictures really could give it justice. So, and being able to sing in those caves was really, I mean, I think it was more for the choir than it was for anyone else on the tour, just being able to sing in that space and enjoy the natural acoustics of the earth. I mean, it was really incredible.
Cool. Alex is vigorously nodding.
Everything that's been said so far, I totally agree with it. I think Slovenia was my favorite country that we went to. And when you think about it, like, Italy is Italy, and everyone knows Italy. They know what to expect when they go there. But because Slovenia, we really did not know what to expect too much. It just kind of blew all of our expectations out of the water. Mm. It was, I think, well, Ljubljana, the capital, was by far my favorite city that we visited. Oh. And I think it was mainly because the location of the hotel that we were at was right in the old downtown portion of Ljubljana. And it's very picturesque. The other cool thing is there's no cars on the city streets right in the downtown area. So you could just walk down the streets. There's a lot of people all around, but they're all really friendly. I think another favorite part of mine was there was an ice skating rink in the park in Ljubljana. And that was a lot of fun. Mm. But another just really cool aspect was from our hotel room, if you looked up, you could see the castle on the hill overlooking the entire city. And I think that was really cool because, again, in America, in Wisconsin, you don't have any hills, you don't have castles, you don't have that aspect that makes you go, wow, this is so cool, there's a lot of, like, rich history here. And I think the whole city just, for me, brought a lot of that history to life, being able to see it firsthand for myself, and to be able to experience all these different locations. And I think Slovenia itself was also kind of that same way. It felt very, very real, natural, and untouched. And yeah, it was a very peaceful fantastic experience. It was a favorite country.
Oh, I hear it. Well, we finish out. The last leg of the tour takes you to a number of different places in Italy. Was it always a foregone conclusion that Italy would be part of this? Had you taken to the Carthage Choir to Italy before?
Not myself. I think the choir went before, I believe, but I didn't take it myself. One of the reasons that it was possible is because, from the financial point of view, Italy is a little bit more expensive than the other two countries in terms of all the expenses you can imagine, hotels and meals and buses and fees and whatever. So the fact that we were in Hungary and Slovenia, and because of all those connections that I had and friends and so on, it was easier for me to actually coordinate all that part of the tour. That made that portion of the tour be less expensive. So then I could hire the company to deal just with the Italian portion. So that was the reason why it was possible. If not, probably it would have been too expensive and out of our reach. But that was the reason why we could do it.
Sure. So explain why these particular cities were on the itinerary.
Well, if you look at Italy, I mean, you could spend, I don't know, months in Italy, in every city in that country. I tend to think that people in Italy could just sit and sunbathe and allow tourists to come by, and they can just make a living out of that, right? Because every step you make in Italy, you have something to see that is beautiful and historical and whatever. So you had to pick and choose. We had to be careful about where. And, well, Venice was, of course, you have to go to Venice as a place to go because of all the historical meaning and the natural reasons for the city being a city that is an island, and the canals and the gondolas and all that, and also the historical part about the music in San Marco. Sure. That we mentioned before. By complete coincidence, I was just doing a search on internet. This is months ago, more than 6 months ago. I was just doing a search, choirs in the Venice area. And somebody popped up there in the city of Padova, that is only 30 minutes away from Mestre, where our hotel was. When you go to Venice, usually you don't stay in Venice because it's very expensive. It's an island. It's in Mestre, which is the continent. And I found a choir conductor at the University of Padova, happened to be also from Argentina. Oh. Those things that happen. So a very, very nice young man, and we agreed on sharing a concert. And we shared a concert at University of Padova in a building that was from the 13th century, 14th century. Yeah. Sala dei Giganti was the name. It was incredibly beautiful. It was like an amazing concert hall. So that was a concert venue. Then we didn't perform in Florence. We just went through one day because we visited the most important museums there. Then I have another friend in the city of Rome, which once again happens to be from Argentina. And he directs several choirs, so he was able to, and gracious, to accept organizing two concerts, one in a minor basilica, as they call it. There's so many of them in Rome. Called Sant'Eustachio, but it was probably one of the best acoustics we had in the entire trip. It was amazing, really. And then in a nearby town called Frascati, also in a small church, but incredibly beautiful and with great acoustics. So that the reasons were more practical, a mix of practical and historical, in the main cities of the country. If you see the map, Venice, Florence, Rome, makes total sense to cover them.
Right. And then a quick word on how this connection was made with the Vatican.
Well, to be honest, I had nothing to do with that. The company that I hired to do the Italian portion, they are specialists in doing music groups, and they made the connection for both, for San Marco and also for the Vatican.
So you're not a classmate of the Pope or anything?
No. No, even though he also happens to be from Argentina. But
he's got around.
Yes. No, I didn't have any connections there, and I'm very, very glad that they did it, because it was a once in a lifetime experience to sing in that incredible basilica, the biggest in the world, as I understand.
Wow, wonderful! Before we talk generally about Italy, I'd be curious to know what any of the students have to say about the experience of singing in Venice at San Marco, one of the oldest churches yet standing in the whole Western world, and an amazing place to sing. Any thoughts from anybody on that?
I was getting sick at the time, and I'd been really tired from walking all day, but it was an interesting experience to be back in the area where they tell none of the tourists to go. And so it's, and just sitting back there and then singing with the mass, there was a couple of things that went wrong, but you know, that's a concert when everyone's tired. But I do remember the acoustics being very, very nice. It was just, it was almost an ethereal experience, just because the rest of the church was dark and we were off in this kind of side chapel area for their mass. And so it was just kind of us existing there with the Italian mass going on and singing with it.
Almost on your own, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I thought that the Basilica was absolutely, I mean, breathtaking. Our tour guide, Lucia, she put it very nice, like, really well when she said she's been there so many times and she still has not figured out a word to describe it. I mean, it's the truth. I really couldn't either. It's absolutely breathtaking. So being able to sing there was even, you know, it was such an honor. And another thing I really found interesting about San Marco's Basilica was that not only is it so old and so beautiful and so well, you know, so well built and made, but Venice floods, you know, very frequently. And, you know, our tour guide was saying, you know, even the basilica floods, you know, and just to know that there are times when this beautiful basilica is underwater. I mean, not completely, but, you know, a lot still of it is flooded and it's still just as beautiful and it's still standing. I mean, that's just incredible to me.
Right.
Just absolutely crazy to know the history of that place, and then the fact that we were able to sing there was something I never thought I'd ever be able to experience. And just for that opportunity, I'm really grateful for both Dr. GN, but also for the tour company to put the connections together. So yeah. Also the ability to have them say to almost everybody, you cannot take photos, and then to us say, oh yeah, you guys can go ahead and take some photos while you're in here. It's like, that was also pretty cool.
Wow.
so that, but also just that building itself was something special.
Oh yeah. The mix of Eastern and Western influences, you know, you're someplace that's was sort of at a access point between vastly different worlds that somehow came together there in Venice. Amazing. Speaking of amazing, how about singing in the Vatican?
That was an experience and a half. Even as somebody who's not particularly religious, the ability to go to the center of the world's biggest religion and sing for a mass there was just, it was, well, a religious experience. So it was, and it's, everyone there was so nice, and the priest, bishop, what's the correct word for the man who was giving the mass?
Probably Monsignor.
That's, and he was very nice. He acknowledged us and said thank you very much in English, which was kind of touching.
Wow.
So and then they let us take pictures in that back area where we got to sing, and there's this the Vatican's incredible. It's the St. Peter's Basilica is just it's larger than life in every aspect of the word. The building is massive, the carvings are massive, and then there's again, words can't really describe how it was, and singing there was a good experience, albeit not a particularly musically satisfying one because it's so big, your sound just gets lost.
Nevertheless.
I would say my experience singing at St. Peter's Basilica was even more amazing because I'm a practicing Catholic. So, I mean, it was such an honor to be in this, and not only to see it for the first time, you know, just to be in the Vatican for the first time and see just how beautiful it was and how big it was, and you know, to know, you know what, my choir is going to sing here and we're going to do a great job, and you know what, yeah, like it was such a great experience. Yeah. I remember when Dr. Gian told us that we're going to sing in the Vatican, and I called my dad right away after choir and was like, Dad, like, you're not going to believe this. And right. He was just, you know, he was really nervous about me going on this tour in general. He actually didn't want me to, but that's okay. He was just like, wow, that's incredible. So
maybe you should go on this tour after.
Yeah, well, after I got back, he said that, you know what, I'm glad you went. Yeah.
And by the way, you need to say a quick word about your amazingly close encounter with the Pope himself.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was one free morning, and a group of us got together, and we got to see the Pope and get a blessing from the Pope, from Pope Francis. And that was just so incredible, and we got really close to him. And, you know, my favorite thing was, I found it funny at first, there were just these parents who, as the Pope was riding in his Popemobile, were just sticking their child out into the middle alley, just, take my baby! And so this security guard, you know, picked up the baby and brought him up to Pope Francis, and Pope Francis just kissed him on the cheek, and it was precious. It was absolutely precious. And his smile, he's such a smiley guy.
Yeah,
so it was really cool. Even though most of the blessing was in Italian, you know, there were some English translators there to translate some of it, and you know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
And I loved your photos. You caught that moment, and I'm glad you did. Alex, any thoughts from you on either Rome or Italy?
Italy in general, like, well, the Vatican, as Chaz said, is magical. It's I am Catholic, but I don't practice regularly. But even still, that was, I'm just super glad I've now been able to go. But Italy in general, great experience. There is history wherever you look, even more so than like in Slovenia and stuff. And it's stuff you already know about, but just the fact that it's been talked about so much and you're able to see this stuff. Like, for example, we saw the Statue of David in Florence, and never thought I'd ever see that in my life. And then here I am.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it in person.
And isn't it amazing seeing something like that in person versus seeing a picture of that?
It is. It is. I had a similar experience when I went to Japan, and then I relived it when I was in Italy. And, like, to see the history in your own eyes, in the flesh, is just something else. So, and that kind of happened all throughout Italy. And I'm just super happy that we were able to do the majority of the historical things that are in Italy, we were able to see them.
What a feast. What an amazing experience for everybody. I'm reminded of something Vernon Sell said. He was the gentleman who managed the Carthage Choir European tours for about 20 years. And his favorite line was, "Music opens many doors." And a lot of what you've been talking about, Maestro, in terms of your friendships, musically based, made a lot of these wonderful things possible. Just a very quick word about what it means to take a choir on a trip like this. Why is it worth the time and the expense?
Well, I have the best of all jobs, let me tell you. Because I get to do this often, right? Oh, every 3 years, and also in the nation and close by in the Midwest and so on. But when we go to other countries in the world, it has an incredible significance that I can explain. It can take a long time, but I am amazed that these three young, wonderful people can already articulate the things that they have said today. What I know for sure, they don't know, but I know, and you know, Greg, too, that these people will remember this for the rest of their lives. And from now, in 10 years and 20 years, will keep remembering the amazing things that happened, the amazing places they were. As some famous writers say, they perhaps will forget lots of things or places or whatever, but they will never forget how they felt in all those places, in all those cities, in all those concerts.
The homecoming concert for the Carthage Choir is Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock in Siebert Chapel. The concert is free and open to the public. And standing on those risers will be the three young people we've been talking with today, Chaz Young, Amanda Pettit, and Alex Heiding. And, of course, conducting them proudly, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli. Thank you, all of you, for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for the morning show comes from the